part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
Well, hi, Marvin. How are
you? Hi, nice to meet you. Good.
Nice to meet you. Is it Marvin Nguyen? Is that the last name?
Correct.
Cool. Well, nice to meet you. Thank you for contacting me. I really appreciate you getting in touch about your project, about your book. We should just go right into the introduction, right?
Sure.
Cool. Well, my name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. As always, we have a very special guest on the line. His name is Marvin Nguyen. He is the, I'm not exactly sure, Marvin, are you, I mean, I know you're the creator, you're the writer and artist of The Edge. The book is called The Edge.
Yes. So the artist is Mark Louis, and I'm going to butcher his last name, Vukinkikat.
Oh, wait, say the last name again.
Vukinkikat.
Okay.
Yeah, so we used to call him Mark V. Now I'm referring to him as Mark Louis from now on.
Okay, great. And so you're the writer of the book?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And the book is called The Edge, if I did not say that clearly, coming on. And looks very cool. I'm on the website right now, and it's marvinnguyen.wixsite.com/theedgecomic if you want to check it out. This is a bit of a rarity lately. You are not here to show off a Kickstarter or anything like that. You've got a book that's coming out like via previews and stuff like that, correct? Like in shops.
Right.
Nice. That's awesome.
Issue one came out this past March, and that was kind of a little journey on that one because it was moved twice. So it was really supposed to come out early March, then mid-March, and then it came out late March.
Nice.
So, I mean, we did sell out issue one. Issue two was in May's previews for solicitation because I made a kind of a gaffe with the publisher when they were asking, so how often do you want the book to come out? And I made the mistake of going quarterly instead of bi-weekly. Yeah, so there was a little delay in getting the second issue into stores. So after issue three, we're going to go monthly because we've got 15 issues done already, and we're really right now finishing up what I call one shots, what I'll call gap books. So it's part of a story that was originally part of that original arc that I had to take out because it just expanded too far.
Uh-huh.
So I just converted it into its own story. So it's like a story that takes place between issues 4 and 5, and then there's one between issues 9 and 10, and so on and so forth. There'll be things that we wanted to do, but it just got too big. So we decided just to write its own story for it.
Gotcha. So you're saying that, I mean, initially it sounded like you wanted to do a biannual book and then it became sort of like bi-monthly. But now that you've got 15 issues of The Edge and then you've got like filler books in between. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
That's cool. Well, it sounded like you were busy during the pandemic. I mean, that's great. No, and it looks like is it coming out from Second Sight Publishing? Because I see your t-shirt there.
Yes.
Yeah, they have a cool logo. I like that logo.
Yeah. So Second Sight, they just celebrated the 1 year anniversary of the publisher.
Oh, nice.
And they've got books ranging from superhero to sci-fi, horror books, and now they're coming up with an all ages line. So they're covering the whole entire gamut of the genres of comics.
Nice. No, that's awesome. Yeah, I did take a look at their website when I found them on the web, I should say, maybe social media or their website, and looked at a lot of their stuff. And it looks like they're pretty ambitious as a publisher, especially for like print books and stuff like that. But I mean, the other thing I wanted to mention too, is that you're another kind of rarity on this podcast, not just because you're not launching a Kickstarter, but this is kind of, I mean, it seems to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I wouldn't say, maybe it's a superhero book, a super powered book, like people with superpowers, like doing superhero things. Am I right about that?
The funny thing about it is that, recently on Facebook, people were asking, saying, like, there was a question was, What is your book on the surface and what it really is? So on the surface, it is a superhero book, but the meat and bones is sci-fi.
Sure. Yeah, and when I say, superhero book, I mean, to me, it's people with abilities. They're wearing interesting outfits, not necessarily like, tights and overalls and stuff, over pants, which, I'm actually a big fan of the Superman over pants. Everybody shut up about it. But I was happy to get your book because, as I've mentioned before on this podcast, I mean, I am a big fan of that superhero, superpowered thing. And it's, I mean, there's a lot, there are a lot of indie superpowers and stuff like that, superpowered books. But I don't get contacted by a lot of people that are necessarily doing that. And if you have been on the podcast or if you have contacted me and I forgot about you, I apologize in advance. But yours was sort of like overtly that, and it reminded me of like early Image days a little bit, as to whether that's a compliment or an insult. Like, I don't know how you want to take that, but it
that is
seems to be ambitious in that scope as to like what the
right.
original Image wanted to do. Am I correct?
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, that is the perfect example, and that's actually how I pitch the book at conventions. I say, if you liked 90s Image or 90s X-Men, this is right up your alley. And I'm doing something that I love those books in the 90s, and it's one of those things that I want to go back to, that where it's just you have a group of people and you're just enjoying what you're reading, because it's like, I can't wait for the next issue. I can't wait for the next issue, because you want to know what's going to happen next to these amazing people. But the one thing that we try to do is try to boil these characters down into being how a regular person would deal with these abilities. So our abilities aren't learned. I don't consider it to be a muscle memory like you would in other books, where you can learn how to shoot beams from your eyes, or you can learn how to pop claws out of your hands that it hurts you every time it happens. The powers they're not stable. They turn off sometimes when they need them the most. Them using the powers is eventually going to kill them, because the Edge is a drug it's going to infect them. They're going to get infected eventually by this drug. And it's going to turn bad for them. And we just take it into that kind of world where everyone's trying to get to this thing that they probably don't want.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, that's a cool idea. I mean, I know there was a movie, and it looks like there's another French movie, like How I Became a Superhero or something. And then there was something called like Project Power, which was like this. But it looks like, have you ever heard of a book called Strike Force Morituri, where they only have, so it looks like you've pulled in from a lot of like different eras, something that looks very interesting. I mean, when I opened up the preview of the book and it was like about 15 pages or something, well, A, I really liked the art. Like, I was like, oh, this is cool. This reminds me, let me see if I get the name right, like of Mike McCone a little bit, or McKeown. I'm probably mispronouncing. He was a little bit of back in the day, like maybe a bit of like an Alan Davis ripoff, but then he kind of like developed his own style. I don't know if he's still working, but to anyone who's listening, that's a little bit of like what I got off of the book. And I was just happy to see like, oh, look, there's people in outfits and they're sneaking around, or they're having their like angsty superhero moments, like, I must destroy you or something like that. And it just seemed like pretty cool and something that I wanted to check out. And I was very happy, to read that it's a pretty decent adventure book. So, let me ask you more about the Image thing, because I know that for me, like, Image was, I love the artists of Image. Like, I mean, and I still do. I still, I know that there's a lot of people or artists who have sort of like maybe grown out. Oh, I don't like Jim Lee anymore. I don't like Mark Silva. You know what I mean? It's kind of like the cool, hip thing to do, because maybe their anatomy isn't always correct, or maybe their artwork is a little stiffer. But the one sort of like stain that Image left in the original iteration was that, their books were late and maybe the writing wasn't so good. Obviously, you want to kind of like, you want to be like early 90s or 90s Image, but not be 90s Image. Can you speak to that a little bit, like avoiding the pitfalls of that sort of thing?
Right. So, I have been developing this book since 1993.
Oh, nice.
I would say that originally it had those trappings of the earlier Image, where the story wasn't it wasn't really a good story. It was dependent on a lot of outside factors that didn't really make a lot of sense. So I built a catalog of characters first, and then I started assigning them abilities And I mean, those aren't like a power isn't a character trait.
Sure.
Power is something that's extraneous to that character that makes them the person that they want to be. So I took a break. I took some classes, like writing classes, marketing classes, like business classes.
Nice.
And then I didn't come back to it until probably 2007.
Nice.
And then I met Mark in 2008, and that's when the road really started, was then. So we had worked together to build a story that resonates, and it's not going to be about, oh, these guys are just going to come and wreck up everything, and there's going to be no consequences to everything they do is going to have a consequence.
Sure.
We start off the issue two by showing a little background on the Bolt character and a little bit of his past and how he developed his powers. And it was and it's just basically he's in a car accident with his parents. Mm-hmm. They die, and he's stuck in that car with them for hours before he's rescued. And he's flashing back to that during another event that's happening, and it's like a break for him.
Yeah.
And your character is never the same after this point, where he no longer is that like the youngest and the child of the team. He starts to become a man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good and bad for him. We're going to do something else to him in issue five that's going to flip him around again. So we're continuously testing the characters and putting them in the situations where, what do I do in this situation? Like you have two roads to go down, and then somebody might decide, I want to build another path, another road to go somewhere else, because you can never know where you want to take them. And a lot of times what happens is that as Mark and I are talking, we're like, oh, maybe we should do this and fill in a gap earlier in the story and in a later story, like not a retcon, but like, oh, this is what really happened. This didn't happen. This is what really happened in that part of the story.
Uh-huh.
And then let the characters grow with them. Because the first thing that we do in the first issue, we don't even tell you who the bad guy or the good guys are. Nice. I want the reader to figure that out on their own and say that, because what's happening is everyone loves Revenant.
Okay.
And they start to see his way. They're like, say, oh, well, maybe he's not such a bad guy.
Sorry, that's one of your characters, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the character at the beginning of the story.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's like, who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? We don't know. And we're never going to really describe that to you. We want to let you say, read the story and make up your own mind on which side you think these guys are on, because everyone's going to do something that looks good and everyone's going to do something that looks bad in people's eyes.
Gotcha. So, I mean, a bit of the storytelling is like morally ambiguous, right? You're just sort of, there's nobody there that's like, I'm Captain America or I'm Superman, right? Seems like, it's much more of a, your heroes like live in sort of a much more gray world, right?
Yes. Yes. And even though you may think that this character in the first issue is a good guy, later on, he may do something nefarious. You're like, well, I don't like him anymore.
Yeah.
But like I said, the Revenant is a character that catches on to her because he's such a jerk. And I try to tell people, I say, don't like him. Why do you like him? He's like one of those like in pro wrestling, he's a tweener. He's a guy who could be on a good guy sometimes or a bad guy other times. But he likes being more of that, mixing it up with people. And like, I don't want to be on anybody's side but my own. And he's going to just take advantage of whatever situation he's in.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that sounds really cool. I mean, I'm definitely, I mean, like I said, the preview that I got was, you know, I mean, it was very action packed. I mean, there was definitely, I mean, it seemed like you were setting up some players to be good guys and bad guys, but if there's more of a more depth to it than that, that sounds amazing, you know, to explore, because I mean, usually in sort of like a superhero universe, it is sort of like, hey, black and white, like these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. So that's cool. What I wanted to ask you about, because it's funny, you know, one of the things that all of us 90s, you know, 80s and 90s, whatever, fans or people who could pick up a pencil on our own, you know, we all wanted to sort of create our own superheroes. I mean, I've got a backlog, like people can see sometimes on Instagram or, you know, Facebook or whatever, on Twitter, like I'll post like, hey, I was working on this since the 90s or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'll put up old art, you know, and I've had these characters like sitting around in a drawer. And one of the things for me, you know, and maybe I've tried to do something with them. But one of the things for me was always like, well, there's Marvel and DC, right? And then there's Image and Invincible, right? And that always kind of took the wind out of my sails, like as far as like, hey, I want to create my own sort of superhero universe. I want to do my own superheroes. Can you speak to me about that? Like, you looking at sort of the larger scope of comics being that so much of it is superheroes? Like, how do you stand out from that? And how do you make them, you know, uniquely your own?
Well, I think it comes down to your own voice. And, and like I said, that even though that those other books exist, they're all corporate voices, sure, so to speak, where it's, we want to take this character and we want to, like, so I'll use an example. So back in the 90s, X-Men, and Claremont wanted to kill off Wolverine, and sure, Marvel told them, no, you can't do that. You can't kill off Wolverine and keep him dead. And it's something that we can do in our book is I can say that, oh, you like this character? He's done. I'm done with him. I don't want to worry about him anymore. He's eliminated. And it's just that voice you can have where you're not trying to build a book to sell something else.
Sure.
So it's the old cartoons thing where they were using cartoons to sell toys.
Yeah.
So you have to keep those characters around. And then when you had the Transformers movie come along and you killed off Optimus Prime and people got upset, so you had to bring them back. And then when you brought them back, you had new toys.
Sure.
So, and the only reason why they eliminated characters in that movie is because they wanted to sunset those toy lines and come up with new toys.
Sure.
So it's like that. So you're telling a story that's uniquely to you, uniquely to your own experiences, and something that other companies or things like, well, they can have something that's very similar, but it's not going to be the same. It's always your own voice that you're putting forth in those books. And I've had situations where I was writing a novel, and it was called The Signal, and it became very similar to a movie that came out called The Signal.
Yeah, I like that movie.
Yeah, I had to trash it because it was 70% the same.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, well, move on to something else. And I've got other ideas for other stories that I'm going to do, but I'm not going to talk about them because then I don't want it to get into the airwaves.
Marvin, spill all your secrets on Part-Time Fan. I mean, come on. I want to hear all of it. No, I mean, which brings me to another interesting thing. I mean, you mentioned that movie, The Signal, which I remember liking. It's like there's a radio signal and it makes everyone kind of go crazy, right?
Right.
But if you're creating your own superhero book, how do you avoid making your, you know, because I mean, obviously it's, especially now, right? It's just so in the consciousness, right? There's just TV shows and, you know, movies and more people are reading graphic novels and, you know, into it. And then there's novel adaptation, you know, stuff like that. How do you keep your thing from being a clone of something else? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because, you know, I first looked at your book and I was like, oh, hey, this reminds me again of like Image. But again, I looked at it and I was like, okay, this is different enough to me to be interesting, you know?
Right.
So how do you, like, one of the things I always wonder, and sometimes I wonder if I should do this, you know, do you stop reading superhero books? Do you stop looking at other stuff? Or do you look to that for inspiration? How does that work for you to keep your stuff fresh and original?
Well, I think you look at those things to see how the audience accepts it. So when I'm watching, was it The Boys and Invincible and things like that? I'm looking for reactions from other people and seeing how they see it. So I see it one way, they see it a different way. And we can all talk about how he felt about it. And then I can take some of that and say that, well, I was going to do this with this character, but maybe I'll swerve it and do something different just to keep people on their toes. And I think one of the things that came out of that book is that someone told me that with the Revenant character, because he has the ability to duplicate himself.
Sure.
Someone said, I have a greater appreciation for Multiple Man because of reading your book.
Nice.
So if I can take that and say that, okay, so you like Multiple Man. So let's flip Multiple Man on his head and take this character in a direction that says that, well, this guy's a one-man army. He can go into a situation, he can duplicate himself off a drop of blood, and then he put him behind enemy lines and just tell him just to wreak havoc.
Yeah.
Something that Professor X is going to ask Multiple Man to go behind enemy lines and wreck up stuff.
Yeah.
So what you're looking for is that bent, that little curve you can do to make it different than things that you've read before. So like I said, that when I was originally writing the book, it was influenced too much by those things. It was too much Image. It was too much X-Men in the book. So you have to kind of like, instead of saying that I want to take this book and say that we need a guy with claws, because there's always a guy with claws in the book. We don't have a guy with claws. And if you notice, like a lot of those early books, you had Warblade, you had Ripclaw, you had characters that Liefeld called, they were all Wolverines. They're just Wolverine over and over again. So you have to be able to eliminate those factors from the book as you're going and say that, oh, this guy is too close to a Cyclops. Get him off the board. Or what I did sometimes is combine him with another character. Say that, okay, so this character doesn't have a lot of depth. So what happens if we merge two? That's happened a lot for me where I had two characters that really weren't vibing. So I said, what happens if I merge them into one character? And then, oh, all of a sudden, then I have what I need to work with.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. Well, let's talk about the story a little bit. I mean, because I mean, it's the Edge. There's a drug that gives people superpowers, right? It seems like from what I read, there's some shadowy government that like organization that exists, and I don't know if they're recruiting them or not, or like how the whole thing works. Why don't you talk about like the story behind the Edge?
So, when the story starts off with the character Revenant, he is a former, I'll say he's just a black ops operative. Where, like I was saying before, is that they take him, drop him behind enemy lines, and then tell him to come back. So he's supposed to be on a mission, and he decides that he doesn't want to work with them anymore because he feels like that they're holding things back from him, and he wants to know what's going on, why he has these abilities, what's going on with his family that he can no longer remember. So he comes back to the base, and his handler is Tartable. And it's pretty much a I want the information out of you, or I'm just going to kill you. So Revenant ends up escaping from the facility again and is out in the world. So he has not only does he know what the Edge is, he has a secret in his blood. So Tartable is concerned that he could give up the information, or if he's captured, they could do an autopsy on him and figure out what the Edge is. So Tartable forms a team of people he know that are either close to or edge active to go after Revenant. So there's a lot of maybe Tartable is not a good guy, maybe he is. We don't know until we progress further into the story because he's getting these green people out into this world to hunt down this guy who's like a master assassin.
Nice. Well, it's interesting to me because you mentioned Revenant like several times in this interview, and I'm on your website, and I click under characters, and he's not one of the characters that comes up. But the cool thing is about your website is that what you've got is you've got a list of characters here, and they all have like these turnarounds and stuff, like the turnaround designs, almost like if it was for animation, which is very cool. I mean, I'm looking at Interim because she's in that sort of preview. She's got a cool costume, lots of belts and buckles, Liefeld style. But you know, '90s X-Force kind of there. It looks cool though. But why isn't Revenant like on the list of characters here? Is he some sort of like mystery character or something?
Yes, and a little bit no. So yes, he's a merged critter, and the no is because I'm still building the website.
Gotcha,
It's
gotcha,
something
gotcha.
it's something that I have to devote time to it, which I haven't
Of
had.
course.
Like Gamish's coming back and promoting the book, I haven't had time to go back to it. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks I can get back on the website and I can build out the rest of those character pages.
Sure. And your artist, is he the one doing those turnarounds for you?
Yes, Mark does pretty much 80% of all the art is Mark.
They're really cool. I mean, I like them. I really like his style. I like how, you know, it's funny because one of the things that you know, Image was not necessarily known for was like its anatomy, right? Like the anatomy of their characters and stuff like that. And I'm looking at these turnarounds, you know, that the anatomy was perfect, or, you know, maybe the head was too big, you know, waists were too small. There's that famous Rob Liefeld picture of like Captain America, like with his chest out, you know. And what I really like about these turnarounds, and in particular, I mean, I'm going to mention the character Interim again because she seems to be one of the lead characters. There's none of that, at least in the preview that I read. I do not know what's coming, folks, but at least in the preview that I read, there's none of that. And, you know, you and I are kind of like chatting on video a little bit. I'm going to make the big chest, you know, motion. There's none of the giant, you know, boobs and the, you know, sticking it out and the butt out here. You know what I mean? There's none of that like in your book. And that was one of the things I liked about it, which is that your artist is, you know, he seems to know what he's doing as far as like the form of his characters are concerned.
Well,
And
I
when
mean,
you, oh no, go ahead.
We like sexy characters, but that's not what we're selling. So I mean, sure. a lot of your books are selling that the sexy character. You've got the butt shot on the cover, and sometimes even the nude covers that they'll do like as exclusive things like
that.
We're selling the book based on characters and making it familiar to something that you enjoyed in the past.
Well, but it's interesting to me because you mentioned that, and I've brought this up in other interviews with creators who have like female leads, and I'm looking at Interim, and it's funny because you're saying like I'm not selling the sexiness of it, but I would say that that character is very sexy. It's just not the you know what I'm talking about. Like I just made a noise. Like everyone's gonna understand what I'm talking about. But I think you will if you've been in comics long enough. You know the whole slow down there. Put those away. You know what I'm saying?
The broken back thing and other things. Like I said, we like sexy characters.
Sure,
but we're not trying to sell the sexy. Yeah, the sexy's there. But it's not something that we're going to put out front and say that, oh, look at how sexy she is and things like that. We're not selling swimsuit issues.
No, I mean, and that's the funny thing, too, is at least to me, being a young kid, there were definitely artists who I was or there were characters growing up, like, you know, a teenager. And I was like, oh, you know, that's a pretty comic artist. And then at some point it just like got like out of control. Like it was like, what happened? So, I mean, it's very cool that this is, you know. That is one of the negative connotations that go with like early Image too, where it was just like, oh, a lot of them just became like TNA books. And this is not that at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and since you brought up Interim, let me give you a little bit of information on her. So her abilities are she can create portals that allow her to see 10 to 15 seconds into the future, which allows her to get to jump on other people. And she can also use these as jump portals, so they can use them for transportation.
Cool.
So, and her background is that she's been doing this since she was 9 years old, opening these portals. And some of them aren't closed.
Oh, really?
It's set around the world. So where she's from, it is her home is 12 hours ahead of the rest of the world.
Oh, really?
It's out of flux. So you'll be walking towards it, and it's day, and then all of a sudden it's night.
Yeah.
And what we always say is that it's a door that's open on both sides. So while she can use it and other people can use it to transport themselves somewhere, there could be something open on another side where someone else could come through.
Oh, so are these doors are like permanently open? And is there a difference between like ones that you can see through and ones that you can walk through?
Somewhat. So it depends on where and what proximity she is and where she's like, and you'll see it in the issue one, she's opening it one really close to herself, a small one, but then she can open bigger ones too. And the bigger they are, the harder they are for her to control. And the ones that she opened when she was younger are out of sync, so she can't close them.
Okay. Oh, wow. I mean, that sounds like a really great twist on sort of teleportation and precognitive, like sort of abilities and stuff like that. I'm scrolling through some of these other characters. And one of the things I wanted to ask you when you're working with your artist, like how does the physical design element come about? Like, I mean, you're a writer. Do you provide like detailed descriptions? Are you like doodling something out? You know, like how does that work? Because I mean, the one thing that I will say about these turnarounds, they're very unique, you know, like each design is different. Each character is sort of, I mean, they have their own sort of like fashion sense, you know, to their costumes and outfits. Mm-hmm. So how did that develop for you and between you and your artist? Because, I said, they seem very unique and different from one another, and it definitely helps you get an idea of their personalities, right?
Yeah. So what it usually comes down to is that when we're dealing with the character's personality, and then it goes into what their costumes are, like you're saying, is that so we look at Blaine for example. He's the gunslinger. So we gave him a little bit of Western motif with posters, and then later on when he gets a costume upgrade, he wears chaps, and there's absolutely no reason for him to wear chaps besides he's a gunslinger. So we just want to get that. This is his personality of this character, is that he wants to be a gunslinger. He wants to be from the Old West, and he's going to dress similar to they did in the Old West with a little bit of modern charm. And then like with a mystic, he's a swordsman. So we gave him armor, but is the armor too bulky? Maybe we'll change that later to say that, oh, this armor sucks. So we don't, he doesn't need this. What is he wearing it for? It's just something that's weighing him down as he tries to go into battle.
Well, is Mystic a mystic? Is he like a magical guy? Because I'm looking at his design right now. And it's funny because one of the things, I think I was talking a few weeks ago, we were talking a little bit about Doctor Strange. And I was like, they always give him a sword. Like, I'm like, Doctor Strange is not a sword guy. But I mean, it's cool. Like, I mean, is this guy like a magic, quote unquote, magic user? Because if he is, he's badass. He looks really cool.
Well, I wouldn't say he's a magic user. I think what happened is I just like the name.
Gotcha.
I think it's something that stuck when the character was created. Like, yeah, he seems like a mystic. He seems mystical.
It's cool.
And it just comes sometimes. Like, when he's using these swords and his energy's coming from these swords, is it the swords or is it him? We don't know. We don't even talk about that until later in the book when we start to introduce that these swords have their own past, and they've been around for a very long time. And he's just like the latest person to wield these swords.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, back to Blaine, I'm looking at Blaine. He looks like sort of like a cross between like maybe a Hawkeye and like a Deadpool. Like he's kind of cool looking. I kind of dig the outfit. It's funny because he's got, like you said, he's got the holsters like on his side and he's got like a skin tight outfit. It's just something that would only work in like superhero world. It looks great. A little bit of anime too, with like the turtleneck, the neck going up to like the ear. It's cool. I like it. I mean, I like your artist designs a lot. Mm-hmm.
And then he's got the anime point on the hair.
Yeah. He's got the spiky hair. Yeah. No, that's great.
That was one of the selling points because in the first issue he had longer hair.
Oh, okay.
And it was one thing that I had to get rid of. So we burned it. Like we used it a moment in the story in the first issue to burn his hair off.
Gotcha.
And then we give him a new hairstyle because I didn't really like the long hair on him. I think it didn't really fit his character that much when we first created him.
Got it. Yeah, no, I mean, so I'm looking at this and sort of dive into this more, but I'm thinking like, okay, I've got this guy Blaine. Are you thinking like when you're creating it, are you thinking like colors? Like he wears a red outfit, he has long hair, he has spiky hair, he wears holsters. Like how much direction are you giving your artist? Or do you just sort of like develop the personality and like what he can do and hand that off to your artist and your artist comes back and you're like, holy shit, that's amazing. Like that looks great. Yeah. Like how does that back and forth work for you?
I think that it really depends on the situation and with the character, because it could work either way. So sometimes I am going and I'm giving a description of the character and I'm saying, base them off of this actor or this character in this movie.
Got it.
And use that as a template to bring up. Like we'll have we have a character later on, like we basing them on Antonio from that Desperado.
Antonio Banderas, yeah.
Yes, no Banderas. They based him off of that character. But the original characters, I would say that was 80 to 90% all Mark, where it was just like, hey, this is a character. Let's create and see what he, and he'll come back with different designs, and we'll say that, yeah, it's this one. This one is the one that fits this character perfectly.
Sure. Yeah, no, and does your artist do turnarounds for everything? Like all the characters?
Yes.
Wow.
So that it helps later on when I'm talking about a character and he can't remember who the character was, and I go, oh, it's this guy. Here's the turnaround.
Oh, that's great. That seems like a lot of work. I mean, it seems like he's built maybe a template like for the turnarounds, but even just doing that, like over that, that would drive me nuts. I'm too lazy. I always just do the front view, which is why that shows in my artwork.
Right. So if you're on the front page of the book, you'll see that I've got that character sheet with all these characters on it. And these are the characters that are going to pair up until, like, we've got the characters laid out for up to issue 15.
Sure.
And these are all the characters that are going to pair up until that point. But during, like you said, during the pandemic, we created a whole new slap of characters. So he's going to have to do a whole new who's who image.
Man. Well, see, you just said who's who. And I was going to be like, are you planning on doing like a handbook of the Marvel Universe sort of thing? Like a who's who? Yeah.
Free comic book day next year.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, that's great. And is that coming out through Second Sight too?
Yes.
Wow. And how many characters do you plan on having in there?
So it's going to cover, I think, the first 9 issues. So that was going to cover 20 so characters.
Oh, nice. Nice. And is each one going to have its own page and like
Yes.
real name and
Right.
group of affiliation and
So what I'm actually trying to do is do it like it's a like you're calling up something on the computer screen, because each one of
okay.
these characters is in some system somewhere. So
Gotcha.
it's going to be a like the you're reading, like if someone was looking up their data and saying that this is their power, this is their current affiliation, this is where their base of operation is, if we know it, this is who their comrades are and things like that.
Nice, nice, nice.
And it'll be all question marks for Revenant because he doesn't work with anybody.
Nice, nice. So, talk to me a little bit about, because I really like the idea, and I've worked on project I've that have either never come to fruition or have, and they've taken 10 years, 12 years, or whatever. Talk to me a little bit about starting in the 90s and what the book looks like in the 90s or the idea looks like in the 90s. And what changes you sort of like made a bit more? Like, can you go a bit more in depth about that? Because I mean, to me, the difference between the end and the beginning is always fascinating with a project. And it sounds like you've had this mulling around in your head for a very long time, right?
So, I mean, I think in the original story, it was a lot more of superhero, where it was good versus bad.
Gotcha.
And it's been done. And
Sure.
it's been done perfectly by other people. So I really couldn't keep going down that path that I was going down, where it's just a bunch of characters. They've got all these strange powers, and I'm just creating characters and saying that, okay, this is how they got their powers, and then move forward from there. And I think that was one of the things that Stan Lee ran into when he was trying to create the X-Men, where you run out of accidents that gave people power. So that's why you have mutants, where they're born with their powers. So we're trying to boil it down to say that the Edge is the progenitor of most of these abilities, but not really, not the end be all of how these powers came about. And in the beginning, it wasn't like that. It was that the Edge was something that was forced on the people. It was a flu shot. It was in water, and it just became this whole entire thing where it was too big. It became that half the world was infected, and half the world had powers. And I'm like, I can't juggle all these characters. And then you're trying to figure out how the team fits into that and how their villains fit into that. And it wasn't making sense to me that the whole entire world knows about this and they would just leave people alone. That's not going to happen. They're going to either experiment on them, or want to put them into service for their country and say that, okay, you work for us now. And then it becomes Civil War and all this other stuff that Marvel was doing. So I would kept going down one path, and like, no, I don't want to go there. Build a side road, because I'm going this way now. And it just wasn't working back in the 90s for me, because it was too influenced by things that I was reading. So it was influenced by X-Men, Wildcats, and then they did that story Kindred with Grifter and Backlash, and all of a
Oh,
sudden
gosh.
Blaine and Revenant used to be on a team together back in the day. I'm like, no, I can't do that. Why am I trying to force something into the story that doesn't work for the story? So you get a lot of familiarity between Blaine and Revenant, but it has nothing to do with them knowing each other from the past. It's just that I heard about you and I want to kick your ass.
No, that's great. That's great. Well, but so there's a couple of different questions and I want to remember them. So
Yes.
the first thing that comes to mind is as far as like the edge is the name of the drug, right? Not the
Yes.
team, correct?
Correct.
Can
Correct.
you talk a little bit about a bit more about the drug and how it came to be? What is it? Because it sounds like in the 90s it was something different. Like you said, they were like, we were all into we've always heard the conspiracies of like there's stuff in the vaccine, especially now, right? Don't go crazy, people. Go get your shot. But you know, it sounds like it started off as one thing and then it became another. Is the edge a thing that people are vying for or afraid of? Because that was one of the things in the X-Men books that I never understood about mutants. Like, people hated mutants. And I mean, I sort of get it now that I watch like live action TV shows and I'm like, damn, if I lived in New York, I'd get the hell out of there fast, you know, but, there's also the part of me that's like, why wouldn't I think like somebody like Nightcrawler was cool? I mean, he looks different, but that's badass. Like, he can teleport. Or somebody like Rogue, who is absolutely like one of the most beautifully drawn, you know, from so many different artists. Like, why would people be afraid of her or hate her? I mean, I understand that some people hate like beautiful things or popular things, but I never got like that thing in the X-Men book where I was like, are you kidding? I would be dying to be a mutant, be able to punch through a wall or like turn into steel or shoot eye beams out of my eyes. You know, like, that would be awesome. So is the edge in your world something that people are like, is it easy to get? Is it hard to get? Is it addictive? Is it, you know, you said earlier that it's burning people's systems out. So obviously it's not good for you, right? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So I really can't get into the full on origins of the edge because that's a story spoiler. So
spill
I will
all your secrets, Marvin.
I will talk about one of the characters. So there is a character, Reynard Edgerton, and of course his name is comes from the edge. So he is the person that we pretty much flag as the creator of this product. So we meet him in issue 3. Where he's trying to get back at his research. So it comes down to it where we're going to say that the things have been lost over time, where things are known and they're unknown. Things are written down and they're overwritten. Things are created and then they're uncreated. So we also in that issue, we run into a character name is Marcus Drake. Marcus is a... kind of like the lead or the owner of a pharmaceutical company. He wants the edge. He wants to manufacture it for use for everyone.
Okay.
So they end up later on creating a redefined version of it, and they call it the Verge.
Oh, okay.
So it becomes it can almost become like something that's going to be mass marketed, but it has some of the same negatives to it that the edge normally has. So this is why they're trying to get back to the original research on it and to find out that the code or the secret of why it does what it does, because it affects everyone differently. So if someone was able to get their hands on it, it could become addictive. They could want to inject themselves with it normally. And it's like something like an affliction that I suffer from and other people, like diabetes, where if and it becomes like that, where it becomes detrimental to your entire system. Sure. And then you may have to even inject yourself with it to get yourself back to a somewhat a normal state. But there's a lot of things that will be going on with it as people are trying to fight for it and vie for it. And then you find out that some characters are living with it, and you want to find out why. Well, why can these guys live with it and these guys can't?
Sure, sure. No, that sounds really cool and actually very interesting. Like an interesting take on the whole thing, because obviously, as we all know, like Captain America, who's like one of my favorite characters, was created using drugs, and then they changed it to like Vita Rays, and then it was back to drugs and, you know, the super soldier serum and all that and the search for that. So it sounds like this is delving into taking this on a broader, wider spectrum than that sort of idea. Especially I like the idea of the fact that it's not, that it's something that's out in the world, because that's sort of one of the things that a lot of people have found hard to take with like the Captain, like, really, he didn't write it down anywhere. Like, nobody's got it. Nobody took a blood sample and stuff, which I'm like, yeah, fine. That's the way it is. It's Captain America. Leave it alone. But it sounds like your story is going in a completely different direction, which is cool.
Right. Right. It's out there. People, like your normal population aren't aware of it, but I mean, we're living in the world of mass media. And eventually someone who doesn't like it and doesn't want these people around is going to leak it.
Yeah.
And he's going to talk about it, and he's going to put it on, like, I'm just going to say, he's going to put it on blast. Like, so the character from the first issue, the one that was taken hostages, doesn't like that these people exist. So he's going to do everything in his ability to make sure they don't exist. And he's going to expose everything.
So are people afraid of the people with the powers in this world?
I mean, So it's almost going to become to a point of propaganda,
Okay.
where you're going, if you hate something, and I mean it, and let's just say that I created this a long time ago, so it could be topical now or it could be topical or not if people want to feel
Sure.
that way. The way that people go on to news channels to lie about things
Yeah.
and try to rile up the people that are behind them, no matter what side it's on, because it's happening on both sides,
Yeah.
that riling up your base to say that, point a finger at someone and say that's your enemy.
Yeah.
Those are the, that's the person that's taking things away from you. So it's going to be something like that, where you just want to rile the people up and say that, yeah, those guys over there are the ones that are making it harder for you to get what you want.
Nice, nice. Oh, interesting. Well, no, I mean, that's a cool take on it. Let me ask you about something else that sort of reminded me of the original Image books. Like, you just dive into the story. There is no sort of like origin story, at least in the preview that I read. Is that true for like the rest of issue one and issue two? Like, it sounds like you're just diving into the world and saying to everyone, like, hey, catch up, like, keep up with the story. Which is very cool because, I mean, how many origin books can we all read and sort of get tired of, right? Like, I mean, that's obviously your characters are new, but you're also playing in a superhero universe that is very sort of recognizable to people. So they will, when they read it, they'll get it. So can you talk to me a little bit about that as
Sure.
just diving in?
So the one reason that I don't like origin stories, and probably other people, it slows the story down.
Okay.
It takes the story and grinds it to a halt, because now you're trying to fit something into a story and you're not really getting to any kind of point. So you're telling this origin story, and you get to the end of the story, you're like, okay, set up for the next thing. So what we're doing with this is that we're not telling the characters' origins until it fits into a story.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned before, is that we're going to dive into Bolt's background a little bit at the beginning of issue two, and it flows right into the current what's going on in the current storyline.
Yeah.
So we're going to do like kind of flashbacks, but then it has to build to something that's happening in the story to kind of fold it into that story.
Sure.
So when we dive into a Mystic's background, I think in issue six, it flows right up until the next part of the story that's going on, because he has an awakening, and it's something brand new for him. And not only does it change the dynamics for him, but the rest of the team also. So we're going to do it that way. So when we do Interim's background about her portals, it's going to lead into an event that involves what's going on with those portals.
Nice, nice, nice. Cool. So, I mean, everything will be explained along the way, is what you're
Yes.
saying, right?
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. So, talk to me a little bit about, I mean, obviously your influences. I mean, when did you start reading comic books? I mean, obviously you're talking about the X-Men, you're talking about Image. I would assume you were a 90s kid, like you read that stuff.
Well, I was born in 74, so I'm an 80s kid.
Yeah, oh,
But
me too. I mean, I'm 72. I'm older than you. So, yeah.
I think I really fell in love with those books in the 90s, and that's why I tried to push so many things from there. But my first, and you'll probably get influenced it from the first page of that book, was G.I. Joe.
That's what I mean, it's interesting that that has not come up yet. And it's one of the things I originally wanted to talk about. When this is so funny how like interviews go with me, because there's like I'll have like an idea of like what I want to talk about, and then it just goes all over the place, and then I forget the original. Like, there's definitely a G.I. Joe thing in here too, right?
So yeah, that
Yeah.
was G.I. Joe. Was my first comic,
Like
of
the
course,
Larry
from
Hama
watching.
stuff?
Yes, of course, from watching the cartoon,
Of
and
course.
they have commercials go, join the adventure, G.I. Joe, and it was the only comic book that had commercials. And I would get my grandma, my mom, or whomever to pick me up from the local what's called Murphy's, was the Five and Dime store.
Okay.
And it had spinner racks with G.I. Joe and other comics, Transformers, things like that. And that was the first comics I read were G.I. Joe and Transformers.
That's awesome. Well, I'm gonna recommend another podcast to you. Have you ever heard of the Joe on Joe podcast?
Yes.
Okay, great. Awesome. So I don't need to recommend it. But if you have not listened to it and you like G.I. Joe out there, you should listen to it. Yeah, no, that's great. So you're like a big G.I. Joe fan, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in G.I. Joe throughout the whole entire 80s and walking to the toy store and seeing rows and rows of G.I. Joes. And
how many figures did you have?
Hundreds.
Really?
And I'm right now trying to reestablish my love of that. So I've got the 25th anniversary stuff. I got the 50th anniversary stuff. I've been trying to collect the classifieds and I've given up.
Okay. You mean the figures, right? Because I'm not familiar with all that.
Yeah, the newer ones, the six inch figures they have coming out.
Were you one of those kids that got the aircraft carrier that like?
I was going to talk about that where I had the Sky Striker, but my mother wouldn't get it because it was so expensive.
Oh.
And now when you think back to it, I was like, it was $109 back then. I'm like, that's not a lot of money, but it was a lot of money back then.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it would be thousands to get it now and new in the box.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that's always the thing with me. If you get it new in the box, you're going to be tempted to take it out of the box.
Yeah.
And then you're just screwing yourself. So why not just buy it out of the box? Right. Like, because you want to play with it. You want to have it out. You want, like, with that sort of thing, unless you can buy two, in which case, Daddy Warbucks or whatever. Like, hello. But yeah, no, that's great. Right. That's great. So what's that? Oh, he's showing me a figure.
Yeah, that's the Zartan.
Oh, Zartan. Is that like a new one or?
Yeah, but it doesn't change color in sunlight.
Not like the old one. That's awesome. And you've kept it in the box. Do you keep all your figures in the box?
Yeah, I don't open them.
If I want
something to display, I'll buy it like on eBay loose.
Yeah. Okay, so you're buying them loose. Yeah, I totally get what you mean. Yeah, see, this is nerd figure talk, people. You may not have wanted to hear about this. Yeah, no, I mean, I think you could see some of my office in the background, but I've got so many stats. I take everything out of the box, mostly everything out of the box, unless it's like something I know I want to pin to my wall, and I'm like, okay, I'll just pin it to my wall. But everything comes out of the box in my house. And maybe I'm a sucker for that. No, that's great. What was it about G.I. Joe in particular that you just like fell in love with?
I mean, it was just that adventure where it's you got these group of guys and they're going to face off against their mortal enemies, Cobra, every week. And I will say that I was more of a Cobra guy than a G.I. Joe guy. I loved Cobra Commander.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was because he was the guy that was the freaking coward. I was retreating. It was just the voice, like the crystal talk, his voice acting on the character, and just the situations that, again, I would watch a whole entire show, just Cobra Commander insulting people. And there's a video on YouTube that I watch every once in a while where it's just him insulting Destro or calling him a metal face buffoon or something like that.
Or something like that.
And then since I love Cobra Commander so much, then I was a fan of Starscream also because it was the same voice actor. And it's just the same two characters that are just these whiny, cowardly guys that'll shoot you in the back just to get what they want.
Sure.
And just for them to get what's coming to them eventually in both both movies, they finally get what's coming to them. And you're like, you feel sad for them. Like, holy crap, he just blasted Starscream into atoms. He's just dead. He's gone. And then you turn Cobra Commander into a snake. And then that was the end of that whole entire series. And then you come back with a new series. And it's like, this isn't the same. I don't like this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think I ever proceeded on to the next series.
Yeah.
It's funny because I went several years ago. I don't know that I had ever seen like the G.I. Joe animated movie. And I went to go see it with a couple of friends. They were doing a double bill here in L.A. and in Hollywood at a theater called the Egyptian Theater. And it was Transformers the movie and it was G.I. Joe the movie. Mm-hmm. And the theme song for G.I. First of all, I had a friend of a friend. I didn't really know him that much. Like when that G.I. Joe theme song came on, he started singing it like full blast. And he has this amazing voice. His name is Norge. And he just like started singing. And I was like, what is going on? And it was amazing because I got this, you know, fighting, blah, 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 you know, the whole G.I. Like that theme song is amazing. And people laugh at me. Like every couple of years, I have to like repost it on social media and Facebook and be like, this is the most amazing thing ever. Because it's so crazy, ridiculous. But that opening sequence with them like coming out of the sky, and then when it goes like G.I. Joe, it just like kicks in. It's like amazing. I love it so much. And just seeing it on the big screen with like probably one of the most amazing like sound theater systems ever. It was just fantastic. I mean, if you ever get the chance to see it in the theater, it's a good idea.
Yeah, remember they pulled it because it was supposed to launch in theaters, and after Transformers the movies did so badly, they didn't release it in theaters, and they changed the movie. So Duke was supposed to die in that movie.
Oh.
And they say if you turn the sound down and just watch the scene, you can tell that he died.
Oh, really?
And after Optimus Prime died and people got upset, they decided, no, we're not going to kill Duke.
Yeah,
but
smart.
And he took a snake to the heart.
Yeah,
he bled out, and you see him as his hand releases, and everyone starts crying. No one, like, this dude was in a coma like two times during the show. Yeah. Why would they be crying if he was just in a coma?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's snakes. Snakes affect people in different ways. Like, that's
snake to the heart. He's just fine. He's fine. He's
in a coma. That's great. So, I mean, The Edge is a book that's inspired by like G.I. Joe, X-Men, Image Comics, you know, trying to be something. I mean, that's really cool, Marvin. I mean, I think this is, you know, you've got a, I mean, I've only read like a preview of it, but the potential here is like really, really strong. I can't wait to see like what else you come up with. I mean, I love superheroes. I love people with superpowers. I'm like a 48-year-old man, and I'm going to be like 78, like sitting in a wheelchair, probably playing superhero role-playing games with the nurse that's taking care of me at the nursing home or whatever, if we can afford nursing homes by then. You know, so, I mean, this stuff is just
still
like...
trying to get out to the theaters to see those MCU movies. So.
Yeah, exactly. They'll still be making them, you know, when I'm like 78. But no, I mean, I think this is... Well, we'll be looking for an Edge movie.
I mean, it's always something in the back of my mind, but I mean, I'm trying to put out the best book that I can. And if someone wants to make a movie, fine, we're good. But I mean, it's not a goal.
Yeah, right? No, of course. No, I mean, and that's admirable. I mean, one of the things that I'm always encountering on this podcast, and again, not disparaging the creators or whatever, it's always like, I started this as a movie and I created a comic so I could pitch it as a movie or a series. But I mean, that's admirable that you're like, I want the comic first, which again, I'm not saying the people that do that don't care about the comic, but it's just cool to hear that.
Right. I mean, it seems like that a lot of people are trying to create something for mass media.
Sure.
I mean, like I said, like I was saying, is that the cartoons were to sell toys.
Yeah.
That was the only purpose. And if they didn't sell toys, they got canceled.
Yeah.
Like Young Justice, when it got canceled because the toys weren't selling.
Yeah.
So we're trying to make a comic book that people can enjoy. And if someone says that, oh, we want to do this, this, and this, I mean, I'm perfectly fine with it because we're going to do action figures and things like that. But I mean, it's a goal, but it's not something that I want to push on people. I'm not doing like, oh, if they make a movie, Blaine will be played by this guy. I'm like, I mean, sure. No, it could be a long time from now, and that guy probably won't be acting anymore. So you don't know. So we just want to have fun with what we're doing right now and try to push that as far as we can go.
Sure, sure. And one last question, because you mentioned Revenant a couple of times, and I mean, I saw him in the preview. Is his character going to be like the main driving force, or are you just switching back and forth between all the characters? Is he sort of like, I mean, I know morally he's not like Superman or Captain America, but is he like the first? Is he like the primary one that everyone looks up to, or is like, that's the guy to beat?
He's the guy that you want to beat. He's a jerk and an asshole.
Okay.
But so what I'll say is the book is about things escalating. And so you have your first arc is just one character. Then your next arc is going to be multiple characters where it's going to be a challenge for them.
Yeah.
And we kind of do situations where we pull a character off the board so that the focus can go on other characters.
Yeah.
So Revenant will kind of fade into the background a little bit, but he'll always be around and always be there to start some trouble.
Yeah. 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 Cool. Cool. Well, again, I mean, the book is called The Edge. The creator is Marvin Wynn. I really appreciate you coming on. The publisher is Second Sight Publishing. Cannot forget them. It looks like, according to the link that you sent me, the second issue is due July 14th, correct?
Correct.
In shops. And it looks like, again, It looks like the order code on previews is May211699. Am I correct about that?
Yes, that's right.
Is that the number that everyone's looking for? I mean, I don't know if it's too late for pre-orders, but you can probably still call your comic shop and give them that, you know, the Edge number two or the Edge number one, if obviously you have not read, started reading it yet. But again, it's May211699. I mean, this book looks great. It looks like, you know, something that fans of superheroes, all the things that we've talked about, you know, will be interested in. I was very happy to see it. Again, I'm a big fan of like superheroes, superpowers, you know, all that stuff. It sounds ridiculous for me to say there's not enough of it out there. But I mean, I think that sometimes there's not enough like indie voices like creating that sort of thing. So I appreciate you and I appreciate your book, Marvin. It looks great.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Cool. And any final thoughts on The Edge?
I just want people to know that we're crafting a story for everyone to enjoy. I mean, we're not ostracizing anyone or telling anyone don't come and read our stuff, because we want everyone to enjoy it.
Sure.
I'm very active on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So, man, if you want to ever talk comics, The Edge, or anything else, you know, shoot me a message, and I'll be happy to talk and answer any questions that you have.
And what's the handle, Marvin Wynn?
On Instagram, it is at The Edge Comic.
Gotcha.
On Facebook, at The Edge Comic. And then Twitter, it's at Marvin Wynn.
Nice, nice, nice. And your website is marvinwynn.wixsite.com?
Yes, but because I own theedgecomic.com, so if you go to theedgecomic.com, it'll
redirect. Awesome. Yeah. No, that's great, Marvin. Again, Marvin Wynn, The Edge. Please buy the book. It looks like there's a lot of potential here, a lot of fun, crazy stuff coming down the pike. And, you know, from what I read, I liked it and I was just like, okay, this is cool. And, like I said, it sounds a little ridiculous to say there's not enough superhero stuff, but you know, I'm one of those people. It's just like, just give me more, more of the different things. I mean, obviously we want variety and stuff. I am one of the dudes who likes heroes in tights, and not that this is that, but you know, men in tights, as Mel Brooks once said. But this is not the Men in Tights podcast. This is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. My name is Christian Horn. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Please check out The Edge. Looks like a fun new superhero book, superpower book. And thank you for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Bye.